Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast on Labor Day. Happy Labor Day for those who celebrate. It's also day 8 of the US Open. We've seen the day session, the night sessions just getting underway. We'll cover off that in part 2 as per usual. But you find us right now as the sun sets over the Billie Jean King National Tennis Centre in our usual spot in the Media Garden. David's here. Hello, David.
Hello. Hello. Isn't it a nice sort of sight to look at? And yet it's a bit too muggy, isn't it? I mean,
it's disgusting,
it's
David.
Disgusting. Yeah,
it's absolutely disgusting.
I've just seen Dana Medvedev with his inhaler, and I think that kind of sums up just how horrible it must be to run about in this. It is, you know, when you try and breathe in, you don't feel like you're refreshed by the air at all.
Yeah, I'm going to go with my soupy word again. That's exactly yes. What it feels like. It feels like you're not getting enough oxygen in your lungs, and we are literally just sitting down and having a chat.
Having a beer.
Yeah.
And it's going to get worse, apparently, the next few days.
Lovely. Matt Roberts is here, looking fresh as a daisy. Hello, Matt.
Hello. I'm actually having an Ace Paloma.
Yes, due to queues for the main bar, which sells honey juice, Matt has had to settle for what is actually quite a traumatic cocktail for him, because I kindly bought him one in Indian Wells and he pretty much spat it out in disgust. Undrinkable, he said. I drank mine and his.
You've had about a quarter of an inch of it so far.
It's better. It's definitely better. I can drink this one.
You were dealt a dud in Indian Wells.
I think I was.
Yeah, it was quite heavy on the salt. Look, before we get into day session stuff, I'm going to tell you about our partners for this US Open. They are AO Travel, and they operate the travel program for the first Grand Slam of the season in Australia, in Melbourne. AO Travel can put on packages for you where they take care of your flights, premium accommodation, tournament tickets and behind the scenes experiences, including the all new AO Travel Lounge. And it's to celebrate the launch of that AO Travel Lounge that we have our incredible competition on the go right now until Monday the 18th of September. The winner will receive 2 return economy flights to Melbourne from their nearest airport, tickets to the Rod Laver Arena over middle weekend of the Open for 2 people, and 3 nights accommodation at the 5-star Pullman on the Park Hotel in Melbourne, which I was told today has had a refurb since I stayed there.
Oh.
And it was,
oh, really?
It was very nice when I stayed there. So lucky, lucky
middle
you.
Middle weekend.
And you'll also get 2-day access to the luxurious AO Travel Lounge. You can enter the prize draw today by clicking on the link provided in your show notes. And as I say, you have until Monday the 18th of September at 11:59 p.m. New York time to enter. Terms and conditions apply. Very, very best of luck. My dad has already entered.
Okay. Have we informed him that family and friends are not permitted?
Is that an official rule? Let's discuss off air, David. I'll tell you what my dad's response to that is, which is he's a paying friend of the podcast and listener like anybody else.
Okay.
Don't discriminate against him because of his surname.
He's in the draw.
Right, on to the tennis. And if you include the world number one, Iga Swiatek's loss late last night to Yelena Ostapenko, which of course we covered in part two of yesterday's podcast, we have now lost three of the world's top five players in the space of 18 hours. And that is because we've just watched Ons Jabeur lose out in two straight sets to Zhang Xinwen, 6-2, 6-4. And earlier on in the day, we saw Jessica Pegula lose even more one-sidedly, 6-1, 6-3, to countrywoman Madison Keys. And it's with that match and that result, I think, we should start, because we've just come from Jessica Pegula's press conference, and I find this a really shocking result, quite frankly. Not that Madison Keys has reached a US Open quarterfinal. We know she's got that blistering tennis in her, but 1-3? 1-3 from Jessica Pegula coming in, playing the tennis of her life? I'm shocked by that.
And what are you shocked about? Are you shocked about her inability to meet fire with fire? Because Keys was on it today, and when she is on it, she is a frightening proposition. Or did you feel like that even if maybe she's outpowered, outgunned, that there should be another way back into the match? What was your feeling on
more
that?
More so the latter.
Okay.
I mean, when Madison Keys is on, Jessica Pegula cannot match her for firepower. Not many can. Maybe just Yelena Ostapenko. I don't expect her to be able to meet that fire with fire, and that's fine. But she hit more than 20 unforced errors today. There was very little resistance. There was very little behaviour commensurate with the world number three today. There was very little imposing herself on that match or problem solving out there, and she might not have been able to solve the problem that Madison Keys's A game poses when it's on. But there was so little resistance today. I found that quite bizarre. I know she's a rhythm player, and Madison Keys denies her any rhythm at all, but she looked so flat. And this was a huge opportunity for her, and to come out and not perform, I think, is worse than it's see Jabeur Wimbledon final chat. To come out and not perform, I think, is worse than to lose a match she had opportunities to win, as much as that hurts in a different kind of way.
Yeah, I think that's well said. There was something pretty telling, perhaps, in that as soon as this match was over, Madison Keys was back on the practice court.
Oof.
Like, that's always a bit of a burn, I think, to an opponent if you've just beaten them so easily. It was almost like Madison Keys didn't feel like she'd had enough of a test even, or enough to sort of go on to figure out how even she was playing. And, like, I did think she played very well, Madison Keys. She was hitting the ball with a lot of depth, and there was one wobble that she had in the second set where Pegula got the set back on serve, and that was the moment where I thought, okay, this might turn. Like, I've seen Madison Keys in enough big matches, and I know this wasn't the very latter stages of a Grand Slam where she tends to struggle. You know, she's very good in these sorts of rounds in slams, but it was a big occasion against a fellow American on Ash, and I thought there was a chance there for Jessica Pegula to apply some pressure and knuckle down and make it difficult for Madison Keys, and the opposite happened. She went away, she lost serve, and then the match was just kind of over. And it was definitely a really disappointing performance from Pegula.
That's the thing. It's like what we were saying about Murray and Dimitrov the other day. Dimitrov played a dream against Murray, but he never felt under any pressure. Mentally, I think of Madison Keys and Grigor Dimitrov as quite similar players, really. I felt like Jessica Pegula wasn't able to ask her the right questions today to make her feel under any pressure. She felt comfortable throughout, and we absolutely know what Madison Keys can do with those weapons when she feels comfortable. But when she's made uncomfortable, she can really fall apart to greater and lesser extents. And I don't know, am I being too harsh? What do you think?
No, listen, I don't think you are. And I think actually it was quite telling in the press conference. The way Pegula seems to view it is Maddie can have days like that. And what can you do about it? And I felt, which is totally understandable reaction, and it may be the right one. It may just be that there are some days that Jessica Pegula's top level is just not good enough to cope with the top level of certain players. And I actually think that is the case at the moment anyway. I think she's a really good player who some players have a higher level than when they're at their peak. But at the same time, I do feel like that's letting yourself off the hook a bit. And I understand why you would do that. I'm sure I would do exactly the same in her shoes. But what I was looking for, and I had Pegula in my final, so maybe I'm just a little bit miffed at having missed out and blame her. But I actually think what's going on here is that I thought she had levels that she could call on when she wasn't kind of maybe getting freaked out by the quarterfinal ceiling. And I thought, here, this is why I put her in the final. I thought, it's a matter of time. She's coming into this now. She's won a tournament, a big tournament on the eve of it. Yes, she was exhausted in Cincinnati, couldn't perform then, that's fine. Now she comes out prepped, ready, her home crowd, she's the one getting hype, but maybe not Coco Gauff hype, but second in line. She's getting way more talked about than Madison Keys is, because we've had a decade of Madison Keys sometimes doing well but not actually doing what we all thought she'd do 10 years ago. And I'm afraid Pegula just had no answer, no gear, no acceleration. I think she probably just hasn't played that well all tournament, really. If you look at her score lines, she's found ways through. But I found that a shame, really.
And you asked her about that, David, in press, didn't you? You said, okay, fair enough. Maddie has a gear that I don't have, that very few players can match when she hits it. You said, does that motivate you to try and change things or find ways to raise your gears, or
do you use your off-season differently?
Create new gears. And she pretty much said no.
Yeah,
right.
She says you're always looking for things you can do, but she was happy enough, certainly publicly, to sign this off as Madison Keys being Madison Keys, hitting her straps and playing really well. But there have been too many of these, and because they're not all Madison Keys on, like, fire. I felt she was very candid in her answer before that, when she was talking about how three times this year, when a match has gone indoors, she has not been able to respond. And her ball, she was explaining how her ball doesn't go through the court in the same way. And she was kind of highlighting her own limitations. And I just found that really interesting. And maybe I have overestimated her own power as a disrupting force. But there's no way around it. I mean, I found it disappointing. And I want her to break through, because I think she's done so well to kind of produce more than I ever thought she would years ago. But now we've hit this ceiling, and you can't be content with that. I don't think.
Yeah, the conditions thing was interesting. You know, it was surprising, I suppose, that the match was under the roof. Like, I don't think anyone really had today down as we're going to have a lot of matches under the roof because of the forecast. But there were, like, the odd scattered shower in the forecast, and the US Open took the decision to sort of preemptively close the roofs. Always a word that we struggle with on this show.
I've been on the planet 49 years and I still don't know what I'm supposed to say.
And therefore Pegula played under the roof on Ash, and absolutely, that is now two Grand Slam losses in a row. Marketa Vondroušová, Wimbledon, the roof closed halfway through that match, and Vondroušová got noticeably better and Pegula didn't when the roof came on. And she struggled today in the conditions, and she didn't do very well at WTA Finals last year as well indoors. So I think that is a factor here, perhaps. Those conditions maybe do not suit her quite so much, and, you know, she's not able to play her best. The thing I asked her about in the press conference was really picking up on what she said about always looking for ways to try and improve and try and do things a little bit differently. So I quite sort of tentatively approached the issue of doubles, because I know she talks about this all the time, and I know she's been very, very clear, and I completely believe her that doubles has helped her singles. I totally think that is true, that she is a better player because of the skills she's learned in the doubles, because it actually maybe suits her rhythm to play some doubles on off days and recover from losses by playing doubles. And maybe it, you know, it's fun. You know, she likes playing with Coco Gauff, and the tour is difficult, and if she's able to have some fun, that's a good thing. So I absolutely think that doubles has been a huge benefit to Jessica Pegula. But the point is, I think, she has played over 100 matches this year, and for all that she can say, and is probably true, that, you know, an hour of doubles isn't that physical, it's still something you're thinking about mentally and emotionally. It's still taking up headspace away from your preparation for singles. Factor in all the issues that you get to do with scheduling as well, and maybe not quite knowing when you're going to play and waiting around. She's got more going on in her head, Jessica Pegula, than her singles rivals who've won the other slams this year, you know, for the most part. You know, Sabalenka, Swiatek, Rybakina, they're not playing doubles. They are focusing on singles. And so I just sort of wanted to know, is that something that you will consider in the future of changing? You've talked about changing and trying to find new ways, or are you going to keep playing the doubles forever? And I would, you know, I would sort of understand if you would. And it sounded to me like she's really seeing the Olympics as maybe a little bit of a goal. You know, she wants to play the Olympics with Gauff and get to that point, and then maybe there might be some reassessment. That's my view, perhaps, generally. She made the point that she wants to win slams in doubles as well as in singles, and therefore why should she sacrifice those double slams? And that's a fair point too, but the point is, not many players win singles and double slams playing so much doubles. Barbora Krejcikova the other year, total outlier. I know Serena Williams has done it, but she's not playing doubles, and Venus, but they're not playing doubles all year round as well.
They're not playing mixed.
Right.
I know they have once or twice played mixed, but to play all three events regularly.
So I'm absolutely not saying Jessica Pegula needs to ditch doubles, but I think it was an interesting insight into her mindset that, kind of for her, maybe a double slam would be just as great as a single slam.
Mm.
And that's fine, but it does make me maybe think about her a little bit differently as a singles player, because I was like you, David. I had her going all the way here to the final in singles, and I don't know. I always say I think I'll learn for the next predictions and never do, but it feels like now it would be becoming very hard to pick Pegula going beyond the quarterfinals. There's so much evidence now.
Yeah, I had a very similar reaction. I thought what she was saying in her answer to you, which was fascinating, was yes, it might be a bit of a trade-off.
Mm.
It might be a sacrifice, because I agree with you, it's improved her singles game, and we're always urging players to be more open-minded about doubles,
yeah,
particularly in their developmental stages. I think it's great that she's played so much, but there has to be diminishing returns there in terms of developing your game. You know, her game is pretty developed now. I interpreted it as her saying, I realised that I could be making some sacrifice to my singles with this commitment to doubles, but I know what I'm doing. I'm doing that mindfully, and it's a sacrifice I'm willing to make.
I totally
respect that. It's her career. Nobody at, like, the Olympics thing, I 100% get and support, and you do you. Jessica, right? Like, so long as she's doing that in full knowledge of what a sacrifice it might be, cool, fine, you're doing it with perfect information. But I did think, this is going to change what I do with you and my predictions from now on. It does change how I think of you just a little bit. Great player, but I don't want to do a Steve Redgrave here, but if you see me picking her for a Grand Slam final again, you have my permission to intervene.
In your lifetime. But I mean, yeah, I think the only thing that I wonder on her behalf in years to come, and I don't think she's really the type, so I don't think this will happen, but is if she decides never to sacrifice doubles because she wants to play it, will she ever wonder whether that might have made a difference? Even though she thinks it wouldn't, because you haven't tried it, you don't know for sure. And personally, I love the fact that she plays doubles and mixed too, and I think it's just a message to everybody else that you can. At the moment, that's what it is. But by the look on your face,
today was.
Well, by the look on your face, Catherine, your view would be, well, yeah, the evidence doesn't back it up today.
I think if you're somebody that is champions don't make that sacrifice, right? Champions aren't. I mean, you know, the best of the best here. People that leave no stone unturned.
Are prepared
to throw themselves into a brick wall. Yeah. I mean, the things these tennis players do to give themselves just a chance at success. Look at what Andy Murray's doing. I mean, that's one of countless examples. They don't knowingly make those trade-offs.
And
it's absolutely fine to do that. It just makes you a different kind of beast.
It is almost
to those
as though she's
champions.
Prepared. Well, she's just clearly prepared to not roll that dice because she doesn't want to sacrifice her doubles. And I respect that. If that's how she feels, fair play. Yeah. You know, it's your life and, you know, she's having a great career. And if that's the way she wants to run it, I really understand that. Mm. But I do think you're right. It impacts maybe, given because there's no evidence that she's about to get over the hump, it does impact whether you think she will end up getting over the hump. Mm.
And actually, a point that she made in that answer to me was that she didn't play doubles in Washington. She then goes over to Canada, plays one doubles match, pulls out of the doubles tournament with Goff, and she goes on to win the singles. You know, all while talking about sort of little ways that she thinks she might be able to improve and get better as a singles player. That was why I asked the question about the doubles. So, yeah, if she's absolutely happy with it, then totally good luck to her. I really support her playing doubles. I really, really do. But you're right. It does, I think, just tell you something about her sort of DNA as a tennis player, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was Pegula going. Madison Keys will play Marketa Vondrosheva in the quarterfinals. That after Vondrosheva took care of Peyton Stearns in three sets. 6-7, 6-3, 6-2, this one over the NCAA champion. She was struggling with a shoulder injury, Vondrosheva, during this. I mean, incredible hustle from her. Her serve speeds were way down. She couldn't generate much pace off the ground, but she's one of the few players that can win matches, has enough tool in her arsenal that she can win matches in spite of that. A lot of players would have been out for the count, that being the case. But she problem-solved out there and found a way around it. But it is a worry for the quarterfinals for Vondrosheva, a big worry. She pulled out of the doubles, which was wrenching for her because she was playing with Barbora Strizova. It's her farewell year on tour. She's basically ended Strizova's career by pulling out, and Strizova incidentally is incredibly understanding of that, but there was a gut-wrenching backstage video that emerged of Strizova giving Vondrosheva's upset because she knows what she has to do, and Strizova's comforting her, and it's all the emotions.
Yeah,
all the emotions. And Vondrosheva, when asked about the injury and managing it, she said the balls are very heavy and the season is very long, and the balls are a topic of conversation, even without Ash Barty here. the US Open balls remain a topic of conversation.
And it did, I'm sure there was way more input from other players, but it did feel like Iga Świątek last year was the one sort of leading the charge to change the US Open balls. She won the tournament, they've changed the US Open balls, she's out of the tournament this year. It sounds from Jessica Pegula like they're considering changing back to the other ones. It sounds like there's some players who have, in addition to Vondroušová, made the point that these balls that they're using are heavier, potentially causing injury. Players have said that. So we'll see what the situation is next year. I think at the time of recording, Strizková is still in the mixed doubles. So she's still got that.
Go on, Barbora.
I feel like I'm really sort of rooting for her now, but I'm also rooting for Ben Shelton and Taylor Townsend.
The mixed is a mess of emotion.
I'm rooting for Jessica Pegula, you know, like all of this.
Lots going on.
So I was impressed that Vondroušová, as you said, found a way through that, not feeling her best. You're absolutely right. She's got stuff to fall back on. If plan A isn't working, she's got so much in her game, and she's got such a good tennis IQ that she's able to manage that mid-match and make adjustments. And she started using her slice a lot more and causing Peyton Stearns, who I've been really impressed with this tournament, started causing her problems as well.
She's a top 20 player, I think, Peyton Stearns.
Yeah.
First time I've watched her today, and I was impressed. You know, she's got a sort of slingshot forehand.
Yeah.
A kind of a bit like Caroline Garcia, and you mentioned Jennifer Brady the other day, and I can see that. There's just something else on it.
So Vondroušová Keys is one of the quarterfinals set up today. The other will be the winner of the match currently on court that we'll chat about later between Aryna Sabalenka and Daria Kazatkina. And Zheng Xin Wen, her first top five win and her first Grand Slam quarterfinal. She beat Ons Jabeur 6-2, 6-4. And yes, Ons battled today like she has in all of her matches so far, but that fight can only make up for so much when the game isn't there. And frankly, the game just wasn't there today, and it hasn't been there all tournament. Really, of course there are moments. She's Ons Jabeur, she's a wizard with the tennis racket, but so inconsistent are those moments. I have felt on edge watching her throughout, and that's been a very alien experience for me. And Zheng was just so aggressive today, and that's a real trademark of Wimforsette's players, isn't it? She's very happy to finish points off up at the net, which I think is a real sort of benchmark for players. You see a lot of really talented players that just haven't got that figured out yet, and she does seem to have. And look, we've known about her talent for a long time, but it does feel like Wimforsette might be the jolt that she has needed. Her serve still looks a bit shonky, to quote Simon Briggs, but when it's on, it's a really effective serve. It's a big serve. It just looks like there's an awful lot that can go wrong there. It's certainly not a textbook serve by any means, but her ground strokes off both wings are absolute bullets,
raking, aren't they? I haven't seen her play a lot in the last year or so, and I am mindful that she was up against a subpar Jabeur today, but still, it's still a difficult game to combat, and she just blasted it off the court, really. Her ground strokes, to my eye, and I should be very clear that my eye is not a trained, a seasoned coach, but they look a little unreliable. They look spectacular and powerful, but I'm not completely sure she's got control of them all the time. But that's why I want to watch more of her, really. I'm really fascinated to see how she comes on. She was mentioning in the on-court interview with Blair Henley, who put to her that she's being known as Queen for the element of
Queen
her
Wen.
Name. Queen Wen. And she really liked that.
She liked it, didn't she? I mean, I too would probably like it if I had a nickname involving the word queen.
Yes.
Great. Yeah, so Junxin went through to a first quarterfinal. We'll talk about who she plays in part two. On to the men's matches that we've seen already today, and the match currently on court between Daniil Medvedev and Alex de Minaur, where Medvedev is looking, even by his standards, spectacularly dishevelled. The winner of that is facing Andrei Rublev in the quarterfinals. Rublev having beaten Jack Draper 6-3, 3-6, 6-3, 6-4. Pretty much the match that I was expecting here, in that Draper really showed what he's about and showed that when he's a hardened tour pro with a bank of fitness and match toughness and match fitness under his belt, he'll be a match for Andrei Rublev and better players than Andrei Rublev, quite possibly. But he's not there yet. He's completely undercooked in both ways. And, you know, it is totally to Andrei Rublev's credit that you didn't doubt his fitness for one moment out there. It was disgusting on Armstrong. Absolutely disgusting.
Made worse by the sheer number of people, of course.
So many people. They did. The roof was closed, and they do have a sort of air conditioning unit on. And in his press conference, Draper described it as being, quote, cold, which I would like to...
Really?
He was complaining about the
cold
air conditioning,
yeah, and
being
I
on
think,
all the way through the first
round. I think there's a sort of spot on the court that the air conditioning is directed at where you, like, sort of get a blast of cold, maybe, but it was not blasting towards the press seats, let me tell you that.
Did anyone follow up and say...
I did a face, Matt. I felt like the
somebody
face
needs
covered
to just,
off the follow-up.
Can we just park that air conditioning next to Catherine?
Yes. He did also say it was horrible.
Okay.
He said, like, the humidity kind of cancelled that out. He just said it was really, really hard to generate pace and hit through the court because of the cold in combination with the humidity. And he did go break up in the third set when it was one set all, but the second he lost that break, it felt like he was holding on at that point. And he held on valiantly, but Rublev just keeps coming.
There was more great examples of mic'd up coaching teams, because Draper was going into the corner, James Trotman, his coach, was giving some really good tactical advice of, on the backhand, he was saying middle then line as to what he wanted, very simple, and that really changed the trajectory of the second set. And then in the third set, when Draper was clearly in a bit of a hole and he's got a physical dip, because he was going through these waves. You know, he's never played five sets in his whole life before. And he's such a novice over these longer durations of matches. And, of course, he comes in with an injury and he just undercuts. But he's there, and he was, I think, 15-40 down at about 2-3 in the third set. And he's struggling to keep up. And James Trotman just said to him, come on now, just hang in there. I back you here, like this. And it was... You just saw Draper just walk away with a bit more of a spring in his step, and he went and served out and held to 3-all.
That it's like receiving a David Law voice note, isn't it?
I was thinking exactly the same thing. Walk with a bit more spring in your step.
But I mean, I just so like Jack Draper, the player and the person. From the little I know, I don't know him well, but I love his manner. You know, he's got a lovely way about him. Really solid handshake, look you in the eye, always says hello. Doesn't matter who he's with. You know, he's not... Some players, some people in the past I've had, they'll say hello if they're with the right company, but if they're not, then they'll ignore you. And he's not like that. And I just feel like if he gets a run at his fitness, he is going to be a top 10 player in the future.
For sure.
And Andre, you've told me Andre Rublev thinks he's going to be a top 10 player as well. In the
no
future.
One's a bigger hype man for Jack Draper than Andre Rublev.
I was going to say, do you know who else likes Jack Draper? Andre Rublev. Yeah, in all the sort of ATP videos that they've done this year where they get players to predict who they think will win on clay or on hard or who they think will have a breakthrough, Rublev just always answers Jack Draper to that
so
question.
Sweet.
And yet, I think he's beaten him every time they've played.
Mind you, I seem to remember Pete Sampras and Roger Federer sometimes complimenting opponents that they've got about an 8-0 record against.
Oh, do you think it's an Andre Rublev mind game?
I don't think it is either.
He absolutely lost his mind in the second set. I mean, he didn't resort to hitting himself, but he worries me sometimes. But he still managed to get it back. He got it back, and I like him too.
Speaking of people we like, Carlos Alcaraz beat Matteo Arnaldi 6-3, 6-4, 6-4. Yet another just kind of trademark early round. Carlos Alcaraz, well, not early round, but, you know, early-ish round Carlos Alcaraz match that made me think of, many passages, but I picked out one from Sally Jenkins' piece in the Washington Post about Carlos Alcaraz today, which is absolutely definitive. It's a fantastic piece if you get the opportunity to read it. And I've picked out this. She wrote, "Enjoy the rampant overflow of a young champion who at times, when he should commandeer a match, instead turns dreamy and plays games with such scalloping, tactile touch that he doesn't mind dropping a set because it's a constant inner dialogue for him. Is it better to end the point quickly or go to the circus?" And he didn't drop a set today, but I felt like, and Matt, you watched every point of this, I felt like in that third set,
of course you did,
he was prepared to, in order to go to the circus.
Mm. I had so much fun watching this match. Catherine, I completely agree with you when you always say, you know, you want jeopardy. That is really what we're after when we're watching tennis matches, especially when there's so many to watch. You know, my eyes are invariably drawn to the most dramatic match, the most tight match. And yet, Alcaraz, to me, is the exception to that rule. I will watch him straight sets Matteo Arnaldi in 2 hours and have the best time and not regret a single moment of my decisions, because he was awesome today. There were so many highlight reel shots, and yet they did actually feel like the right shots to be playing. You know, it's so instinctive for him to hit the drop shots, to come in and hit the touch volleys, to lob it back over Arnaldi's head. He had it all going on, to hit rocket forehands, which really knock you back. Even when you're in the crowd, you're like, whoa, someone has hit the ball that hard? How? It was just an absolute treat to watch him. And it was especially so because he came out and I was a little bit worried because he had tape on his leg for the first time all tournament. And if there's one thing that I am a bit worried about with Carlos Alcaraz, it is the fact that he's had little injuries through his career and he is so physical, and I do worry about that. I asked him in the press conference and I believed him when he said that it was mainly preventative. He says he has felt a little bit of pain in his left leg. He made the point that is going to happen in slams, in tournaments. It didn't affect him at all today from what I could see. But then Arnaldi, who I thought played really well, and you have to be good to bring out the sort of spectacular in Carlos Alcaraz, you know, like Dan Evans did the other day. It was almost a compliment to Dan Evans that Alcaraz played so many spectacular shots. It was a compliment to Arnaldi today as well. Like, you have to be so incredibly talented to win, what, 10 games off Carlos Alcaraz today? Like, Arnaldi did fine. I've been impressed with him. He just doesn't have the weapons to be able to hurt Alcaraz. He's got a slightly funky serve as well. But yeah, maybe something to monitor as this tournament goes on, that strapping on Alcaraz's leg. I don't think it's anything to worry about at the moment at all, but if it were to get worse, obviously it would be. So hopefully he sort of nipped it in the bud immediately by putting the strapping on and not making it any worse by playing today.
The tennis gods wouldn't take Carlos from us.
Oh, it's Catherine. No.
They would. They've done far worse.
Yeah.
Let's form a prayer circle.
There was another line used by Sally Jenkins, and an anecdote about one Carlos Ferrero banning him from using the drop shot in a match because
a great story.
And he got a couple of games in and he just
points. It was a couple of points.
It was 2 points it lasted.
She wrote that he couldn't resist sending a hummingbird hovering over the nets that just dropped for a clean winner, and he turned around and he says, "I just couldn't help it, Juan Carlos."
Yeah, it's a wonderful piece. Given, you know, I sometimes feel anxious about covering Alcaraz on this pod, because you're like, how do you sum that up? You want to just say, go and watch him and experience it, but that's not what you come to a podcast for. And also, not everybody's lucky enough to get the opportunity to watch him live or even on the telly, and we really don't take it for granted, trust me. So I hope we can, with the help of Sally Jenkins and others, do our best to bring that experience to your door. It's what we try and do here on the Tennis Podcast. What I need to go and try and do is get in some air conditioning, or there won't be a part two.
We are.
I'm feeling very Daniel Medvedev.
We're
right
melting
now.
Away here, folks.
It's not even that hot, is it? It's just disgusting.
Yes.
It really is unpleasant. Bring back the weather of 2 days ago. That was nice, wasn't it?
Okay, I'll do that on Friday.
Thank you very much, David. Right, we'll be back part two in just a moment.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This edition of the Tennis Podcast is sponsored by Tennis Channel, and Tennis Channel Plus is the place to watch the French Open. They've got every court live, and you can watch on your phone or on your smart TV in HD.
Sounds great. There's genuinely nothing I like more than watching multiple courts with matches everywhere.
And can I just sit and watch court Susan Longlin all day?
You sure can, David. Wherever the stories are, the rivalries emerge and the generations clash, you can watch it all with daily live coverage beginning on Monday, May the 20th. Be there when it happens by subscribing to Tennis Channel Plus to stream daily coverage of Roland Garros. Use promo code TennisPod20 for 20% off your annual subscription. Welcome back to part two and to Tennis Podcast Towers, where, well, we've been sat in the lovely, lovely air conditioning all evening. Some of the fittest athletes on the planet have been struggling, fading, succumbing to some of the most brutal conditions in sport. We've just watched 4 hours, 41 minutes between Alexander Zverev and Jannik Sinner, the remains thereof. Alex de Minaur, roadrunner Alex de Minaur, his legs went against Daniil Medvedev on the Armstrong court earlier. I mean, these are some of the fittest tennis players out there. They are not players that are generally prone to cramping. And they're gone. They're absolutely gone. It is taken down the best of them this evening. And this is set to continue for the next 3 days.
Yeah, and get hotter. This is the tournament, the city, the climate that made us realise that Roger Federer does sweat several years ago when he lost to John Millman. And it was a very, very similar night, that one. That was maybe more shocking because it was him, but this was more brutal in terms of what we've just witnessed for the last 5 hours worth of tennis between Jannik Sinner and Alexander Zverev. The cramping of Sinner the complete fade of Zverev, where he looked like he was sort of walking on hot coals or something, as though his legs didn't really work. They're the most brutal conditions of all, I think. I think it's worse than Australia, where they get very hot, but it's the humidity just does something to players. It makes them a bit delirious, and it makes me worry for them, really. You know, I mean, I'm sure it's only temporary, but God, I mean, if you get through, what's it do to you for the next one?
Yeah, horrible conditions to play in, horrible conditions to be dressed as a carrot.
Those Carotta boys, they deserve to go through to the quarterfinals, really, from tonight, don't they? Because they remained dressed as full carrots. And I don't think that was a breathable fabric that those those carrot outfits are made out of. All goddamn evening, watching their man just... I mean, the ebbs and flows of the physical struggles tonight were, I mean, uncomfortable to watch, quite frankly. Just as one of them sort of pushed through the tunnel and was coming out the other side, suddenly the other one would be bent double, and they were kind of taking it in turns to just be right on the brink of collapse, the both of them. That's as close as you can get, I think, without retirement, and staggeringly, without the quality of the match really falling off all that much. There was the odd total brain cramp moment and the odd, you know, super unforced error, forehand dumped in the net or whatever. But by and large, an extraordinary quality of tennis, I thought.
I was astounded by how high the quality was, considering how bad they were clearly both feeling. Their ability to still hit a tennis ball incredibly sweetly was just evident, and you know, some of their movement in the rallies was still good, even if they could barely walk or breathe outside of the rallies. Alexander Zverev in the final set to win the match volleyed the best I've ever seen him volley and covered the net generally. I don't know where he's learned to do that or when he's learned to do that, but he looked like a completely different man up at the net in the last few games of that match, and I think it helped him win. He was you know, taking advantage of the fact that Sinner was standing so far behind the baseline to return his serve, and he was sort of using that space, and it was good tactics. And yeah, that's a five of his last six losses now for Sinner in slams have been fifth sets.
Yes.
And all sorts of types, you know. He played an amazing match last year and lost match point against Alcaraz. He's lost from two sets up a couple of times or once. He's tried to come back from two sets down and then lost in a fifth. He had that match against Altmaier where he was really cross with his attitude in that match, and then he's had this one today which was just so physically grueling. He is in why do I lose all the close matches territory. It keeps happening to him, and it's, you know, on the one hand it shows how damn good he is that it takes those sorts of extraordinary performances from those people to beat him, but cumulatively by now I feel like he should have come through one of these matches, and he needs to start coming through one of them if he's going to make even more progress than he already has.
Yeah, 5-7, I think, now his best of five set record. And it's his double-edged sword, isn't it? I mean, he did staggeringly well to get that match into a fifth set. We thought he was going to be retiring after two sets, or two and a bit sets. We thought he was down and out when he went two sets to one down. To get it into a fifth was a monumental effort for which he deserves extraordinary credit. But equally, I do think he has a bit of a problem, David. As Matt said, it's all different types of losses in close matches. He needs a lift or elevator, if you will, ride with David Law. What would you say?
I'd say, sure, sign me up.
No, what would you say to Yannick?
Oh, okay. do you know, I was thinking when you were describing those five set defeats, about pre-Henman British players at Wimbledon when I was a kid, and the amount of times they'd fight heroically and get it into a fifth set and then lose. But they'd still get good headlines afterwards. And there's a bit of that in Sinner, really. He was incredibly brave to and persevered to get into that fifth set, but he lost. And the winners don't. You know, that's the truth. And he's got to prove that he's a winner.
The winners don't lose, David. That is...
But, you know, it's those kinds of matches. You know, everybody loses matches, but those kind of matches, you've got to win those. If you're going to make the next step, he lost the one against Alcaraz. That's okay. I mean, he had a match point, but then you can't keep doing it. And I mean, look, he's still a young lad. Everything else, Darren Cahill's there. He's got his team. They're working on it. He still lost to Alexander Zverev, and I thought he would win. And it was a weird, weird night. They're not all going to be like that. But I just feel like, well, I'm coming up with excuses for him, really, there, aren't I? Because you've got to just go win. Find a way. He was close. He was bloody close. And I think he will get there. But until he does, there's always a question mark.
Alexander Zverev, in his own words, I'm back. Back in a Grand Slam quarterfinal. Unfortunately, he did look like an exhumed corpse at the end of the match. And he now has to play... Carlos Alcaraz, so...
Who's had a lovely afternoon.
He's briefly back.
Good luck with that.
Staggering effort. It is worth remembering that he is a type 1 diabetic, isn't it? So, that is absolutely no inhibitor to being a top-level athlete at all, thanks to incredible modern medicine, and he obviously manages that condition very well. But it is an extra factor for him, and... extraordinary, really, that physical feats like this evening are possible. Daniil Medvedev, we didn't have the opportunity to watch loads of his match against Alex de Minaur. Frankly, after that first set that he lost so one-sidedly to de Minaur 6-2, we thought there was going to be a lot more of that match that we could watch once we got back here to the air conditioning. But actually what happened is Daniil Medvedev went into total lockdown mode, started drilling laser-like ground strokes and stopped missing and just watched Alex de Minaur's legs slowly disappear from under him. It was clinical by the sounds of things. Vicious.
Yeah, I edited part one of the podcast and then headed it out to Armstrong to watch what I hoped would be, you know, Medvedev on Armstrong. Fun vibes out there. And honestly, the set and a bit that I saw, Medvedev was just in total control. He was pleased afterwards when he found out that de Minaur's legs had gone. You know, I think he took some real pride in that, in a way, that he'd managed to sort of induce that by locking his game down and extending the rallies. He also really improved his serve. I think it was letting him down in the first set, and he was able to rely on it in the next three and shorten some of the points, because he was also feeling it himself. He said in his post-match interview with Blair Henley that the conditions tonight reminded him of Tokyo.
Well, we did not have a good time in Tokyo.
He did not enjoy Tokyo. And I actually went back and had a look at the quote he gave. He said, "Who will take responsibility if I die?"
I felt like that at about 3 p.m. on Armstrong in the media seats.
So
you lasted about...
Will David and Matt sue the USTA after my death?
You lasted about 8 minutes out there, didn't you?
So yeah, it was a sort of combination of, you know, improving his own serve to protect himself a bit, but also being prepared to take Alex de Minaur into the trenches in some long rallies, and it really worked. And yeah, a completely sort of drama-free end to the match after he'd been using an inhaler in the first set. Quite the turnaround.
It all goes to my point that the more dishevelled he looks, and
yep,
boy did he, the better he plays. And now he plays the godfather to his daughter, Andrei Rublev.
Mm.
And it'll probably take his legs away as well.
and smile mercilessly.
So, yeah, that was an interesting one. Medvedev, in his press conference afterwards, had a real athletes, they're just like us moment when he was saying that he wanted to be able to watch Ben Shelton against Francis Tiafoe tomorrow night, or probably tonight as you're listening to this. But he said, due to the Spectrum Disney fiasco, he no longer has access to ESPN in his hotel. So he was going to seek out an illegal streaming website in order to be able to watch it. So for anyone out there that is a victim of the Spectrum Disney fiasco, Medvedev is in the same boat as you, if that's any comfort
and
at all.
And it appears you have his blessing.
Yeah, tweet him and he'll send you the link.
Arina Sabalenka made her 2023 Arthur Ashe Stadium debut tonight as the pre-anointed new world number one, and she utterly dismissed Daria Kazatkina. It was a real statement of a performance. I know that's a dodgy matchup for Kazatkina. She can get, as much as her weapons are beautiful and such craftsmanship, she can get blasted off the court. She is vulnerable to that.
I didn't realise her serve is now in the 60s a lot of the time.
Mm.
I mean, you can't do that and beat Arina Sabalenka.
No, and she didn't. really interesting quote, I thought, from Sabalenka after the match, talking about achieving world number one and the way she achieved world number one. She said she was gutted to see Iga Świątek lose. And in her mind, she was thinking about world number one. It was her target for this tournament, but she was just assuming that Świątek would reach the final and she would have to beat her in that final in order to achieve it. That is what she was manifesting for this tournament, and she wanted that. She wanted to physically, directly take it off Iga Świątek. Now, I'm sure in the course of time that feeling will fade and she'll know that she earned it. It's a 3-6-5 ranking and all of that, and we all know she's earned it. But I can understand that, and I do really like that attitude. I love that she really wants to prove it against the best of the best. She doesn't want an easy ride anywhere. I love that about her.
She wants moments as well. She wants, yeah, the dream, I suppose. And I do think there's probably a bit of her that is looking for ways to properly believe that she really is world number one. And there'll be moments like when the ranking list comes out on Monday and she can log on to the WTA website if it's working and see her name up in lights as world number one. You know, maybe they'll do some sort of presentation that is a trophy or something like that. There are just little things like that that I think you're looking for. And the ultimate would have been, as you say, meeting Świątek in the final, knowing that she'd got all the way and beating her. That would be the ultimate. But, well, you take what you get. And she is a very worthy world number one. I mean, she has worked so hard the last few years and has achieved this goal in the Australian Open and has been consistent throughout the year.
Zheng Xinwen next for her, of course, conqueror of Ons Jabeur earlier on. So those are the quarterfinal lineup set. Tomorrow we start in earnest with those quarterfinals. And interestingly, the schedule looks thus. Yelena Ostapenko against Coco Gauff is first up at midday. And we understand on the rumour mill, given that Coco Gauff isn't in doubles action tomorrow, that it was a request from Coco Gauff to play at midday in the day session in the full heat of the day because she believes, and probably quite rightly, that she can cope with that better than her opponent and probably better than any opponent tomorrow. So Gauff Ostapenko at midday, followed by Novak Djokovic against Taylor Fritz in the full brutal heat of the afternoon.
I think Novak Djokovic is going to want Goff, Ostapenko to go on for as long as possible, so that, yes, he'll be playing in the heat, he can't escape that, but he might be able to escape the direct sun.
So he doesn't have to wear the hat.
And I do think it's sun which really bothers Novak Djokovic. Just heat as well, but sun seems to stress him out and make him feel bad when he's exposed to it in such a direct way. And the shade does come across the Arthur Ashe Stadium during the afternoon.
Oh, we know.
Yes.
It's hard to miss.
Yeah.
Some serious shadow issues.
Exactly. So I think he's going to be hopeful for some shade, but it does feel like a big factor in that match.
Night session is Saranika Steyer against Karolina Mukova, and then Francis Tiafoe against Ben Shelton, which Daniil Medvedev will be watching on a dodgy stream somewhere. That's your lot for today, folks. We will give some coverage to the doubles events and the wheelchair events, which are, well, some of them are getting going, some of them have been very much going in earnest. I know that Taylor Townsend and Ben Shelton have been causing a big stir, haven't they, in the mixed doubles. And Taylor Townsend is also on for the doubles double, because she's still in alongside Leila Fernandez. They play tomorrow in a quarterfinal against Abby Dabrowski and Erin Routcliffe. There you go. That is on Armstrong tomorrow, if you're in town and want to go to that. Oh, as is some player, Luisa Stefani.
Yes.
What a player she is.
Which court?
Armstrong.
Excellent. My favourite course.
With Jen Brady.
Okay. Yep.
Right, so that is tomorrow. Tonight I need to say hello to Willow. Lovely, lovely Willow, our US Open mascot. Our mascots, Maisie, Xenia.
Right, Maisie. We didn't do so well today.
Hello, Xenia.
When Dimonor was a setup, I was feeling really confident, Maisie, but then Medvedev decided to play out of his mind.
David's a very in-the-moment kind of guy when he's watching tennis. And Matt has Darwin. Feel like you got points today?
No, we're losing all the close matches.
Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have, of course, our epic executive producers and top folks, Jamie, Hannah and Drew. Hello to you. And we have shout outs.
We have Shane Clifford, who is from Kerry in Ireland, but currently living in Tanzania.
Whoa!
Wow.
So cool. Right, Shane.
Hello, Shane.
Shane Anun, like the physical trainer of Andy Murray.
What a shout that is.
Wow.
Look what I've done, Shane.
Shane was sort of the breakout star of resurfacing.
Yes,
wasn't
he was. He was indeed, and he's a lovely chap.
The documentary.
He always says that, though.
I hope, Shane from Kerry, you'll agree that David Law has done you proud there. Yeah. This is why we don't do shout-outs on days when David's not around.
Given that I have been really struggling not to nod off here at 2 a.m, I don't quite know where that's
right.
come from.
On with the next shout-out, Matt. Thank you, Shane.
Next, we have Dallas Nelson, who is from West Jordan in Utah.
Wow.
Dallas from Utah. That's... I was hoping you were going to tell me he's from Texas because I know somebody called Austin from Texas.
Which is epic.
but Dallas from Utah is also quite epic. Wow. When Matt and I were driving from Palm Springs to Las Vegas, what a sentence,
as you do,
in March to see Taylor Swift, we were staggered that Salt Lake City in Utah was featuring on road signs, just, you know, to indicate how far away it was for people that might be driving there, despite the fact it was, what, 700, 800 miles away?
Yeah, way too far to drive.
But this is America and people do. So there we go. Thank you, Dallas.
Yeah, thanks, Dallas.
You sound
Dallas.
Epic.
I don't know any tennis players called Dallas. I do know an American footballer called DJ Dallas who plays for Seattle Seahawks. My team.
Should I do the final shout-out?
Yeah.
We have Jacqueline Martin, who is from Exeter in Devon.
All right, Jacqueline.
Like Jackie Martin. Isn't Jackie Martin something that did something funny in lockdown?
The yes, like the local counsellor or something.
Yeah. Is that who I'm thinking of? Is this her?
I don't think so.
Where's this Jacqueline Martin from?
Exeter.
Hey.
Hmm. Look, I'm going to have to do some Googling here.
You are.
I am, but nothing's coming up. I feel like I could have got this all wrong.
Great radio.
You were falling asleep.
True.
Someone help me out here. Tennis Jacqueline's.
Well, this Jacqueline says that she loves hearing David's 90s tennis anecdotes because that was the era that she loved watching.
Yeah, go on, Jacqueline. I can't talk. Oh. I can't even give you any tennis 90s tennis Jacquelines, I'm afraid.
Jacqueline, no, it's not Jackie, it's Jacqueline. It's Jacqueline.
It's Jacqueline, and all Jacqueline says is all I can think of is Todd Martin.
Oh, well
done. She's done it for us.
She said, so looking forward to what you come up with. I think we've done her proud.
Alberto Martin.
Alberto Martin.
Who was in the box of Andre Rublev today, alongside Fernando Vicente. New coach.
Was he?
Yes. New co-coach.
Wow. First Wimbledon
Same
match.
Same spelling, isn't it? Martin. Martin.
Yep.
First Wimbledon
Thomas
match
Martin,
I ever watched Echeverry. Live was Alberto Martin. Against Andy Roddick, court 18.
I see.
Look, Jacqueline, again, I'm sure you'll agree, David has really pulled something out the bag for you there. At 2:11 a.m, so apologies for whatever nonsense we've been spouting, but we're doing our very best. And we're very grateful to all of you, friends, shout-out friends, intro friends, mascot friends, just general friends. We're very grateful to have you. You're the reason that we're here and spouting nonsense at 2:10 in the morning. So why don't we do it all again in 24 hours' time? We'll be back, you'll be back, and we'll speak to you then.
Jackie Weaver.
Weaver! God, it was just a completely different person.
What did she do with herself?
She was the one that said...
She was a, quote, hero of chaotic viral council Zoom meeting.
You saw it, David. Why did I think it was Martin?
Oh. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.